Last but not least, as you say, we will talk about another frontier of the science, and we close the cycle from the presentation of this morning. Dr. Stephen Rintoul will talk about the southern oceans in the Earth system. Dr. Rintoul is an expert on the role of the ocean in the climate system and has a particular fascination with the southern oceans. Born and educated in the US, he moved to Australia in 1990 to take up a position with CERO. His research has provided new insight into the structure and variability of the world's largest ocean current, the contribution of the southern oceans to global circulation patterns and the climate system, and the control of biological productivity by ocean physics. Over the last 20 years, he has been the driving force behind a number of major experiments investigating the role of the southern oceans in the climate system. Most recently, he led the Climate of Antarctica and the Southern Ocean Program of the International Polar Year, involving scientists from 18 nations. His scientific achievements have been recognized by many national and international awards, including appointment as CERO Fellow, the organization's highest honor for science. He's a fellow of the Australian Academy of Science. Please.
Thank you very much for the invitation to speak to you today. What I'd like to tell you about is the global influence of the Southern Ocean. For many of you that have had the pleasure of traveling to Antarctica by ship, you'll remember the Southern Ocean mostly as the uncomfortable prelude and postscript to your season on the ice, where the real Antarctic science happens. But as our attention is focused, has shifted from understanding Antarctica itself to understanding the place of Antarctica in the Earth system, our focus on the Southern Ocean has increased. I'll start, though, by taking a step backwards. If we look at the ocean, if you took a north-south slice through the Atlantic, the ocean would look something like this, the temperature distribution of the ocean. The main point is that the ocean's cold. About three-quarters of the ocean volume is colder than 4 degrees. And that immediately tells us that the ocean is full of water that has sunk at the poles and filled the abyssal part of the ocean. To balance that sinking at high latitudes, relatively warm waters need to spread towards the pole, and the temperature difference in the flow of those two limbs of what's called the overturning circulation is the main way that the ocean transports heat around the globe and is the main way, in fact, in which the ocean influences the climate. Somehow that upper and lower limb have to be connected. For about 50 years, we thought that was due to mixing in the middle of the ocean. That was convenient for a while. We had no way of measuring mixing, so we had no way to prove whether that was right or wrong. About 10 years ago, we invented techniques that would allow us to measure the mixing and found it was about a factor of 10 too small to account for the amount of sinking that we observed at high latitudes. There needed to be some other way to connect the deep ocean to the upper layers of the ocean, and it turns out that that occurs in the Southern Ocean. So this shows a schematic cross-section of the overturning circulation in the Southern Ocean. What you can see is that water at depth north of the Southern Ocean, at depths of 3,000 or 4,000 meters, slowly makes its way across the Southern Ocean and shoals as it goes. It reaches the sea surface near Antarctica and then takes one of two paths. If it spreads towards Antarctica, it gets made very cold by the Antarctic atmosphere. Sea ice freezes, shown here in the white. And as the sea ice freezes, the salt dissolved in the seawater gets left behind in the underlying water. And a combination of cold temperatures and increases in salinity makes that water very dense, so it can sink from the sea surface right down to the seafloor. And that's the main way that the oxygen levels of the deep ocean are renewed. If that deep water upwells a bit further north away from Antarctica, it takes a different path, spreads north, and also eventually sinks, but it's not as dense, and so it fills the intermediate levels of the ocean. And a lot of the Southern Ocean's influence on global climate stems from this circulation pattern known as the overturning. When we think about global warming, it's important to remember that in terms of the change in the heat content of the Earth over the last 50 years, most of that heat has gone into the ocean. So about 84% of the total change in the heat balance has gone into warming the ocean. And the reason that the ocean can store so much heat is primarily related to its very high thermal inertia, but also because that overturning circulation can transfer warm surface waters into the ocean interior. So the overturning circulation sets the capacity of the ocean to store heat. It also sets the capacity of the ocean to store carbon dioxide. So this shows a map of the anthropogenic carbon dioxide that's accumulated in the world ocean. It's high in the North Atlantic, which is an active sinking location. And it's also high around the Southern Ocean. In fact, if you integrate around the globe, there's more anthropogenic carbon stored in the Southern Ocean than in any other part of the ocean. And it gets there through the overturning circulation primarily. One other important aspect of the Southern Ocean circulation in terms of its role in climate is the Antarctic Circumpolar Current. It circles Antarctica from west to east, carries about 135 to 150 million cubic meters of water with it every second. And as you can see in this map, the Drake Passage latitude band is very unique. It's the only place where there are no continental barriers in the way. And that unbroken channel of ocean turns out to have profound implications not only for the dynamics of the Southern Ocean circulation, but for the circulation of the global ocean circulation. It connects the ocean basins. It means that climate anomalies in one basin can be transferred to another. And it's also intimately linked to that overturning circulation. So that slope, that the fact that the deep waters can rise to the surface in the Southern Ocean and provide a window to the deep sea, is intimately related to the fact that there is this strong east-west current. Of course, it doesn't look quite like this, those simple arrows I just indicated. Sorry, if we could go back one and start that animation. Thanks. This shows two model simulations. The one on the left is a simulation that's with a resolution that's typical of our climate models today, and it shows a very steady picture. The picture on the right is from a higher resolution numerical model, which shows the rich small-scale structure or ocean eddies that are typical of the Southern Ocean, and they play a critical role in establishing the Southern Ocean, in the dynamics of that circulation, and also in the transfer of mass, heat, and carbon dioxide. A third important element of the Southern Ocean and climate is the sea ice, of course. I won't dwell on it here today. The picture on the left shows the summer distribution. The picture on the right shows the winter distribution. The formation of sea ice effectively doubles the area of the continent in winter. It also provides a very effective insulating lid, so it prevents the air-sea exchange of heat and carbon dioxide. But it's also bright, and so it tends to reflect a large amount of energy back into space. If the amount of ice decreases, it lowers the albedo of the Earth, will tend to absorb more solar energy, warm up the ocean, melt more ice, and it provides a positive feedback. So for each of these reasons, the overturning circulation and its contribution to global heat transport and storage, for the role for the ocean carbon cycle and determining how much anthropogenic carbon the ocean can store, and for sea ice, all of these are elements about how are ways in which the Southern Ocean directly affects the Earth's climate. So changes in the Southern Ocean that would affect any of those three elements would be expected to have widespread impact. So important question is whether the Southern Ocean is changing. This image of the Larsen B ice shelf collapsing has become a bit of an iconic image for Antarctic change. The reason this has occurred is because there were warmer air temperatures that actually caused melting at the surface of Antarctica, very unusual in Antarctica. It only occurs on the Antarctic Peninsula. But also, warmth from below in thinning the ice shelf also contributed to its collapse, we believe. What other evidence is there for change in the Southern Ocean? We've got increasing evidence that Antarctica is losing ice. It's been well known in Greenland, but the mass balance of Antarctica is becoming more clear, largely through the combinations of different types of satellite instruments. This shows one example from Eric Rigneau. The red circles, which you can see off the western part of Antarctica, represent the amount of melt. And there's very strong melt along the Amundsen and Bellingshausen seas. You can see, just pick out some smaller red dots around East Antarctica. More recent measurements from a different satellite instrument suggest that there are relatively large rates, not as large as in West Antarctica, but loss of ice in parts of East Antarctica as well. There are several reasons why the Antarctic ice sheet might be losing mass. One is dynamics, that there's water underneath the ice, as Jean Robert told us about, which may be accelerating the flow of ice off the continent and into the sea and influencing sea level rise. There's also increasing evidence that when the ocean interacts with the floating glacial ice around the margin of Antarctica and thins those ice shelves or causes the ice shelves to collapse, that the ice shelves themselves act as a buttress. And once they're removed, the flow of ice off the continent and into the ocean increases. So one of the really key questions for us in terms of Antarctic science and its influence on the Earth system is what is going to happen to the Antarctic ice sheet? What are the dynamics and how rapidly will it change in the future? And the ocean has some part to play in that story. As a result of the increase of input of meltwater to the ocean from melting glaciers or from changes in sea ice or precipitation, where that fresh water is added in places where water can sink to the sea, sink from the surface into the deep ocean, it carries that signal down to depth. And we've recently found that even the densest layers around of the ocean around Antarctica are freshening and becoming lighter. The picture on the bottom right shows a set of three curves. The green is from 1970, the blue are measurements from 1995, and the red curve is from 2005. This shows examples from a single line of longitude showing a steady shift from relatively salty waters in the earlier period to fresher, warmer, and less dense waters. So the abyssal layers of the ocean are already responding to these changes in high-latitude climate. It's a good time to be an oceanographer, especially if you're working in a place like the Southern Ocean, which is remote, isolated, and historically has been very poorly measured. One of the new tools we have are Argo floats, profiling floats that drift with the ocean currents and periodically surface, measure the temperature and salinity, and transmit that data back by satellite to us in the lab. It's allowing us to measure parts of the ocean that we have simply not been able to measure before. There are already more profiles from 5 or 6 years of the Argo program in the Southern Hemisphere than from the entire history of ship-based oceanography. One of the things we've been able to use that information for is to compare the recent observations to historical observations and see how the upper ocean is changing. What we find is, averaged around Antarctica, that there's a clear pattern of warming. And unlike some other parts of the ocean, the warming extends quite deep in the ocean. That's a clue to us about what's causing that warming. And in this case, it's associated with a shift of Southern Ocean currents closer to Antarctica. And that shift, in turn, we believe, is linked to the changes in winds that Susan mentioned, connected to the southern annular mode, the winds getting stronger and retreating towards the poles. Even the Argo floats don't help us much in the ice. And the satellites also can't see the ocean beneath the ice. So we've developed some new tools. This picture shows a southern elephant seal with a miniaturized oceanographic sensor that's been glued to the fur on the back of its head. This work has been started by a seal biologist in order to study the population dynamics of the elephant seals. But as oceanographers, we get an added bonus out of this work because the seals are incredible animals. They dive to depths of 1,500 meters. Regularly to 500 meters, and they spend the entire winter feeding within the sea ice zone. And so it's a way for us to get temperature and salinity profiles under the ice for the first time. This picture shows one example. It's a map of temperature at 200 meters depth on the left, using only data from ships and floats, and on the right, using data only from seals. And this is for a particular 2-year period of seal data. The red dots in the two figures show profiles that were obtained within the sea ice. And you see there are many more from the seals than from the other tools. And in fact, most of our information in terms of the number of profiles of temperature and salinity south of 60 south now comes from seals rather than from any other method. I mentioned how the Southern Ocean was providing a sort of service to us, a benefit, in the sense that it was absorbing anthropogenic CO2 and therefore moderating the rate of climate change. That comes at a cost, of course. As CO2 dissolves in seawater, it changes the chemistry. It increases the acidity and decreases the amount of carbonate ion. The ability of many animals, including, for example, the pteropods, the marine snails shown in the two photos, they build their shells out of a kind of calcium carbonate called aragonite. As more CO2 dissolves in the ocean, the carbonate ion decreases and approaches the level it which aragonite can no longer be stable, the saturation limit. The curve on the bottom shows the decrease in carbonate ion. A few years ago, we thought that by about 2060, the Southern Ocean would reach levels where it would be undersaturated with respect to aragonite. This happens first in the cold polar regions because of the temperature dependence of the solubility. A more recent study has shown that if we take the seasonality of carbonate ion into account, we cross that threshold as early as 2030. You would have noticed the large stone on the way into this auditorium, the stone from Yap. That stone is actually made of aragonite. So according to this study, by 2030, that stone would dissolve if placed in the Southern Ocean. It's unlikely to reach there, but it gives you a feeling for how rapidly these changes are happening. And it's also worthwhile keeping in mind that the acidification question is completely independent of any climate model and the strengths and weaknesses of different modeling approaches. It's a very simple to understand chemical implication of putting more CO2 in the atmosphere and having more CO2 dissolve in the ocean. In terms of sea ice, in the Arctic, it's well known to all of you that there have been very strong trends in recent decades in Arctic sea ice. There's been little change in the total extent of Antarctic sea ice in recent decades, but it hasn't stayed stable. Those same wind patterns that Susan mentioned, related to the southern annular mode, and there's been a trend in those winds related to the depletion of ozone. Those winds are not completely east-west. They've got some north-south flows associated with them, and they've driven changes in the sea ice that have led to large changes in the extent or the duration of the sea ice season, a decrease in the western Antarctic Peninsula and an increase in the Ross Sea. The rates of change in those locations are comparable to the rates of change in the Arctic, so we don't want to be too distracted by the fact that the overall extent has not changed. There have been strong regional changes. What do we think will happen in the future? We can take the climate models that exist now, and we know a little bit about what's likely to occur. It'll be warmer, and there will probably be more precipitation at high latitudes as the hydrological cycle responds to the warming of the Earth. That will make the surface layer more buoyant and restrict the input of nutrients from below. The key question really is whether this overturning circulation, which I've shown here again, will strengthen or weaken or stay the same. There have been some recent studies that have suggested that as a response to the increase in winds that so far have been due largely to loss of ozone, but in the future greenhouse gases will cause a similar change, that increase in winds has caused a spin-up, a strengthening of this overturning. That deep water that shoals and rises to the surface near Antarctica is very rich in carbon that's accumulated from organic matter sinking into the deep sea. When that deep water reaches the surface, it releases carbon to the atmosphere. And that tends to add to the carbon dioxide burden in the atmosphere and accelerate the rate of climate change. So it's crucial to know whether that overturning circulation will strengthen with climate change or will weaken, as other studies suggest, or will stay the same, which is suggested by the models that actually capture the effect of those small-scale eddies that I mentioned before. I'll finish up with just a few thoughts about Southern Ocean science and policy. Many of these comments would apply to science in general, or at least Antarctic science in general. Clearly, one of the roles and one of the contributions we have to make is to educate and to inspire and to raise awareness of the link between Antarctica and the Southern Ocean and the rest of the globe. Our other role is to detect change and to assess the likelihood of further abrupt changes in the future. The information that we can provide from science is also very important in guiding decisions to be made about mitigating climate emissions and adapting to the climate change we can't avoid by developing better climate models that incorporate a better representation of Southern Ocean processes and that have been verified by Southern Ocean observations. Southern Ocean science will also contribute to wise stewardship of marine resources. And as the human presence in Antarctica continues to grow, there's also a role for science in protecting lives of people that go and the environment from the consequences that may flow from that activity. To sum up, to finish, to deliver on those that contribution to policy from science, it's extremely important that we make a commitment to sustained observations of the Southern Ocean. There's been quite a lot of Southern Ocean activity in the IPY, and one of the legacies of the International Polar Year is to demonstrate that a sustained observing system for the Southern Ocean that's multidisciplinary and is needed to answer the question of how the Southern Ocean will affect climate, sea level rise, and marine ecosystems is not only needed, but that it's possible and that it's cost effective. We've proved we can do it, and now it's time to get on with it. So to finish, I've tried to indicate ways in which the Southern Ocean influences the Earth system, and to make the point that changes will affect climate, sea level, and marine resources. Those changes that we've seen so far are largely linked to the Southern Annular Mode, we believe, but the climate change is expected to deliver similar changes in the future. To respond to those changes, we need better understanding of how the Southern Ocean works and how it influences the Earth. And to do that, we need some sustained observations. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dr. Rintoul, and please receive this medal recognizing your contribution to the summit.